This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Vigils were held around the country this week to mourn the 49 victims of the Orlando shooter at an LGBT club called Pulse. The victims were mostly people of color and majority Latino. Because the shooter, Omar Mateen, called the police while he was holding hostages and declared allegiance to the Islamic State, the massacre is being deemed a terrorist attack. GOP presidential candidate Donald Trump used it to reiterate his idea to ban all Muslims from the U.S. while declaring that he wanted to protect gays and other minorities. Candidate Hillary Clinton squarely identified, quote, radical Islam as the culprit. But the story is so much more nuanced. Now it has emerged that Mateen was a regular at the Pulse and even posted his profile on a gay dating app, suggesting that he might have been conflicted about his sexual orientation. His ex-wife has also revealed that he abused her. And lost in all of this mess is the heartbreaking fact that Pulse was a safe space for Orlando's LGBT community in the midst of an increasingly homophobic political landscape. Many are calling for the attack to be labeled a hate crime rather than a terrorist attack. My guest is Veronica Bayetti Flores. She is a freelance writer, political consultant, and the co-host of Radio Menea, a Latina music podcast. And she just published an article in Remezcla called "The Pulse Nightclub Shooting Robbed the Queer Latino Community of a Sanctuary." Welcome to the program, Veronica.
Thank you for having me, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, first, how important is it for us to identify the victims as primarily people of color? That fact struck me immediately when a lot of websites started saying we've identified, you know, starting to identify the victims. And I started looking at the images. And of course, it's Orlando, it's Florida. So, of course, there's a large Latino community. It also happened to be Latin night at the Pulse, which probably had a filtering effect on the people who showed up. And as I looked at the images of the faces, it became really clear these were almost all people of color. Isn't that important for us to identify?
It's absolutely important. And I think that one of the reasons why it's so important to do so is because the truth is that both mainstream movements for LGBT liberation and Latino civil rights movements have consistently failed LGBTQ Latinos in prioritizing any of our issues. We have people talking about immigrant rights that aren't able to talk about the ways LGBTQ immigrants are experiencing that system. We have people talking about LGBTQ issues in terms of marriage and equality and ignoring the particular ways that LGBTQ people of color are experiencing violence in our daily lives. And so when we heard about this news and realized that it was mostly Latinos and mostly people of color targeted, we know that this is very, very important to talk about. And we need to take this as an opportunity to talk about the ways that our communities experience violence, homophobic and transphobic violence, every day.
And I want to play for our audience and you excerpts of the responses by political candidates. First, we'll hear Hillary Clinton's response to the Orlando massacre, and then Donald Trump.
Speeches like this one, after Paris, Brussels, and San Bernardino, I have laid out a plan to defeat ISIS and the other radical jihadist groups in the region and beyond. The attack in Orlando makes it even more clear. We cannot contain this threat. We must defeat it.
I called for a ban after San Bernardino and was met with great scorn and anger. But now, many years, and I have to say, many years, but many are saying that I was right to do so. And although the pause is temporary, we must find out what is going on. We have to do it. It will be lifted, this ban, when and as a nation we're in a position to properly and perfectly screen these people coming into our country. When I'm elected, I will suspend immigration from areas of the world where there is a proven history of terrorism against the United States, Europe, or our allies, until we fully understand how to end these threats. I refuse to allow America to become a place where gay people, Christian people, Jewish people are targets of persecution and intimidation by radical Islamic preachers of hate and violence.
And that was presidential candidate Donald Trump, and before that, candidate Hillary Clinton addressing the Orlando massacre on Saturday. They were speaking earlier this week. Veronica, what do you first make of Clinton's assessment that this attack ought to be seen essentially through the lens of radical terrorist, and radical fundamentalist Islam, that basically by doing so, she puts this incident, this massacre, squarely in the same camp as the San Bernardino attack last December and even the 9/11 attacks, rather than, say, the Charleston church attack? Do you think that this is an accurate characterization?
You know, Sonali, I think that especially because it's an election year right now, in this moment, it feels particularly important to me to really stand up against Islamophobia in the wake of Orlando. I will not allow these shootings to be funneled into a larger scaremongering narrative that fuels further violence and further war, not in queer Latinas' name.
And Donald Trump's statements first basically saying, look, this ban that I propose is really the right way to go about it. And of course, he is addressing a community of, Muslim community that's not all immigrant. There are many Americans who are Muslim. But also he then goes on to sort of characterize himself as a champion of gays. I will not live in a country where gays and Jews have to live, in fear. How do you see that?
You know, it's extremely, extremely hypocritical. And the real fact is that Islamic extremism has really nothing to do with the ways that Latinos experience homophobic and transphobic violence in our daily lives. If he was really interested in talking about the ways that we experience violence and the LGBTQ communities of color experience violence, we would be talking about the murders of trans women. We'd be talking about ending deportations. We would be talking about the need to end the detention bed quota that requires that Immigration and Customs Enforcement hold a minimum of 34,000 individuals every day in detention center. There are so many ways that our communities are experiencing violence. These are just some of them. We need to talk about the ways that sexual violence is perpetrated by police departments in a way that's endemic across the nation, how desperately our communities need healthcare. So since Donald Trump most politicians don't really talk about any of these things, it seems really hypocritical to me now that he should position himself as a champion.
And I'm glad you brought up police violence. Photos have emerged of the shooter, Omar Mateen, posing in t-shirts with NYPD emblazoned across them, that he was an admirer of police. And of course, we know that he worked for a global security firm, G4S. Mm-hmm. So in your mind, I mean, it's really hard for us to sort of pin down who this person was. He's dead. There's no way for us to fully understand his motivations. But from the hints that we've seen so far, he seemed to be much more in the sort of gung-ho gun rights, kind of vigilante violence camp than anything else. What do you think?
Well, certainly, I think that that's exactly right. And I think that we need to look towards this person's history of violence and his admiration of violent institutions. The NYPD is an institution that's been really well documented to engage in a lot of homophobic and transphobic violence. It's really, really well documented the ways in which they've targeted our communities. There have been some reforms, but they've actually been really unresponsive to some other reforms. We need to see things like in New York City, folks are demanding the Right to Know Act, queer communities have a lot of demands of the police department here that have been unheeded. And what I think is way more important than this person's ethnicity or this person's religion is to look at his history of violence, to look at his history of admiration of violent institutions. And that's where we're going to see a history that sort of puts things into perspective as to why this person did what he did.
Right. And interestingly enough, in New York, during a vigil for the Orlando victims that took place this week, Police Chief Bill Bratton spoke, which angered many people in the community. And in fact, people started chanting, "You kill people," and basically were trying to shout him off. Even the mayor, Bill de Blasio, received some anger from the community. Does that mean to you that queer communities in New York and likely elsewhere are basically cutting through the spin and seeing this attack for what it is and refusing to kind of accept a narrative that's being created?
I think that communities of color, LGBTQ communities of color, know exactly what's going on. We are not confused. We have rarely, if ever, been able to find safety in the police. And to see Commissioner Bill Bratton at the vigil for the victims of Orlando's shooting, saying that they're going to keep us safe when they've been unresponsive about getting things like the Right to Know Act passed, when they've been unresponsive about ending the collection of condoms as evidence of prostitution-related crimes, including trafficking crimes, I think that that really shows the true colors of the NYPD and of the NYPD's leadership. They are not invested in our safety.
So let's talk about what Pulse represented and what many clubs, nightclubs say, you know, in spaces where LGBTQ communities gather represent at this time in the U.S. political landscape when, you know, state after state that's dominated by Republican legislators are passing these ridiculous, did we lose her?
Sorry.
Are passing these ridiculous bathroom bills that, you know, claim that straight people have to fear from a trans person sharing the same bathroom as them. What did Pulse symbolize?
You know, Pulse was a gay club, and what happened happened on Latino night. And I think that for many Latinos in the United States, Pulse and any gay club that has a Latino night represents a safe space, a space where we can be free from systemic violence, where we have an ability to connect with our roots and be who we are, especially in a context where so many of us are rejected by our families, especially in a context where so many of us left our homes in situations that are extremely violent, especially when we're thinking about, for example, Orlando and Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico is going through an extremely violent economic crisis right now, and many of the people that are leaving Puerto Rico for the U.S. are landing in Orlando. That should not be something that we don't talk about. This space was a safe space. This space was a space of freedom. It was a community center. It was not just a club. And to have that violated by this kind of violence is extremely jarring for many of us in our community.
And how much of the rhetoric that we see from our politicians, you think, fuels this violence? The same politicians who then turn around and denounce it.
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's exactly right. I think it's very hypocritical of Republicans, for example, talking about sending thoughts and prayers when they've been telling people, they've been introducing anti-LGBT legislation, they've been inciting panic around transgender people's use of public restroom facilities, they've been telling people that we're degenerates, that we're going to burn in hell, and I want to be really clear that they have blood on their hands.
And so how do you think the community is going to want to respond at this moment now? It's still so early. It's still a moment of mourning. So many vigils around the country, people coming together to mourn, one of their own, if you will. The people are calling, you know, these are our brothers and sisters. Whether you're gay or not, whether you're a person of color or not, I think a lot of people have suddenly, it's hit home to a lot of us what can happen when you have this explosive combination of easy access to guns and homophobia and racism that come together and have these innocent victims. How are people responding in creative ways, also in political ways? I mean, are we, you know, should we be all pushing for more gun control? What do you want to see happen?
You know, I think that the Latino and LGBT community of color in general right now is mourning, and I think that we need to take our time to mourn, but I think that we also need to not forget that we're very resilient. We have gotten through much worse before. We're going to continue to see violence enacted in our communities, and we're going to find creative ways to respond. We're going to find ways to still have joy in our lives, and we're going to find ways to take action. I think that once our community can mourn and once our community can take our time to process these events, we're going to continue with what we've always done, which is resist and take action and demand that our legislators take action as well. We don't want their thoughts and prayers. We want action. We want them to stop wasting time dehumanizing us and take time to deal with national matters of importance, such as how a man like Omar Mateen could walk into a store and buy a gun that's designed to kill as many people as possible as quickly as possible. That's what we need right now.
And is there anything that you can make of the fact that Mateen himself was a regular at Pulse? Or is this kind of distracting? Is this something that we should be focusing on, that he even had a profile on a gay dating app? What do you make of this?
Yeah, you know, that's really complicated. And I think we should not jump to conclusions. It's totally possible that Mateen was either closeted gay or bisexual. And if that's true, my heart really breaks for the pain that he must have been going through and what led him to do this. But I think that it's also possible that he was doing his research. Like you said, this man worked for a private security firm. Mm. He was an admirer of the NYPD. He was a pro, and he could have set up a profile, been to the club to check it out and to do his research, because as we know, since this was the largest mass shooting in modern US history, this was very well planned out. This was not a spur of the moment situation. So I think that we need to be really careful with the kinds of conclusions that we jump to, and think about his past history of violence, right, and think about the institutions that he admired and how that, and you know, the anti-LGBT climate that we're experiencing right now in the United States, and how those things might have informed his actions.
Right. Some are saying that his history of domestic violence may have been the best indicator of his propensity to pick up a gun and shoot people, you know, so.
That's right.
And of course, the issue of domestic violence is rarely seen as an important enough issue for politicians to do something about. Mm-hmm. Veronica, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. We'll post a link to your article, Indra Mescla, about this story. And is there another website that you'd like to give out? You co-host a podcast?
I do. I co-host a podcast on Latino music called Radio Menea. And our latest episode, actually, that came out before the shooting was a celebration of queer Latinos and queer Latino musicians. And I've been listening to it again lately just to remind myself of the joy and the resistance and the beautiful things that we're capable of doing together. So if your listeners would like to do that to remind themselves of the joy that our community is capable of, I would recommend that. We're at radiomenea.com, and you can find us at iTunes, Stitcher, and SoundCloud.
Well, I know what I'll be listening to tonight. Thank you so much, Veronica.
Thank you so much for having me, Sonali.
Veronica Bayeti Flores is a freelance writer, political consultant, and co-host of Radio Menea, a Latina music podcast. She just published an article in Remezcla called "The Pulse Nightclub Shooting Robbed the Queer Latino Community of a Sanctuary." This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.